what we learned investigating the death of Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez.
It sounds like you ran almost every theory to its end.
Binge all 8 episodes of Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Hair Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. California is giving 76,000 incarcerated people the opportunity to get out of prison earlier. The state of California trying to trim its prison population. More than 63,000 people convicted of violent crimes will be eligible for good behavior credits that shorten their sentences by up to a third instead of the maximum one-fifth of the sentence that had been in place for the past year. 20,000 inmates who are serving life sentences with the possibility of parole are also included in this number. This new rule taking effect recently. We're going to talk about who the individuals are that were convicted under these specific kinds of guidelines for which they would be eligible for an earlier release. Joining us is Michael Romano, the director and founder of the Three Strikes Project at Stanford Law School, where he teaches criminal law and policy. He also was appointed by Governor Newsom to chair the California Committee on the Revision of the Penal Code. Mr. Romano, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about how this came about. What caused this change in the ability to use good behavior credits to have a larger portion of the sentence done away with?
Sure. So this was passed by voters as part of Proposition 57 in 2018, I believe, or 16, as just a general part of California's, I think, ongoing plan to try to incentivize rehabilitation and reduce overcrowded prison population. And so I think it's part of a host of measures that have proved successful largely over the past decade or so. And this is just the latest move.
So there have been Republican critics in the legislature who said that the governor established this policy unilaterally, that it was not part of Proposition 57. Can you explain that discrepancy?
Yeah, so it's hard to explain that because it's just not accurate. So in Proposition 57, voters specifically gave the power to CDCR, the Department of Corrections, to be able to change the credit rules in order to comply with federal court orders, which are longstanding against CDCR, generally manage the prison population, and incentivize rehabilitation, which is precisely what this change in the credit rules is. So, voters didn't specify the percentage of credits available, but they did give that power directly to the director of CDCR through the rulemaking process. So that's how it came about.
Okay. And can you explain how the good behavior credits work? Because some of us, may not know whether is this for going above and beyond, taking on some sort of a leadership role or doing more work, or is it just not getting into trouble? How do you get good credits?
It's a little bit of both there. I should say that staying out of trouble in prison is not the easiest thing in the world because of the prison environment. So, just being late for class or being late for work or taking extra food at a mealtime can get you, credits lost. But in general, this is to incentivize, staying out of trouble, as you said, and also participating in programming for which you get credits for both. I also wanted to say that this is not shortening the number of sentences that you described quite that way, because it only applies going forward from May 1st. So, the majority of people whose sentences are affected still need to go before the parole board and won't be released from prison at all unless the parole board deems that they're safe to be released from custody.
Does the parole board take into account good behavior credits in their determination? I know they have wide latitude, but do they typically take that into account?
Oh, they take everything into account, but it's quite, I'll say, stingy, the parole board. The parole board releases about 16% of people who are eligible who come before them. So in other words, the vast majority of people who, or maybe not the vast majority, a large percentage of the people who are covered by the new credit system may get to the parole board actually a few months earlier, you know, in the extreme circumstances, a little bit, a few years early, but still they only become released from prison if they can convince the parole board that they're safe to be released. And as I said, that's a relatively small group. More than 80% of people are denied by the parole board.
And just to clarify, you say this is prospective, it's going forward. So does that mean that any good behavior credits that people have accrued prior to May 1st, they don't count toward this?
Right. Those are under the old scheme. So maybe it's clearest to put it this way. If you have a 10-year sentence and you've served 5 years of it, you only get the new credit system for the next 5 years. You're not released immediately. And the way that the math works out is that you'll be released about 5 or 8 months early, earlier than you would have been if, again, you follow the rules, participate in programming, and don't lose your credits.
We're talking with Michael Romano at Stanford Law School. He's the director and founder of the Three Strikes Project. He also teaches at Stanford Law and chairs the California Committee on the Revision of the Penal Code. Also joining us, District Attorney for Sacramento County, Anne Marie Schubert, who signed on to a petition along with other DAs to repeal these regulations. Thank you very much, Ms. Schubert, for being with us. What are your concerns about this new regimen for good behavior credits?
Well, I think it's important, first of all, to say that the lawsuit that's been filed against corrections has to do with the fact that corrections failed to have a public notice period to allow the public to actually have input. And that's what the lawsuit's about. Now, I would agree with Mr. Romano that Prop 57 did give wide latitude to corrections. I agree with that. But what I disagree with and why we are suing corrections is that doesn't allow you to bypass a very important part of the regulatory process, which is we should all have a voice here. Victims should have a voice. Advocates should have a voice. We should be willing to have a conversation about the wisdom of letting people out. And when we talk about this, we're talking about murderers, rapists, child molesters who can essentially earn, you know, a sentence and get credits. And with due respect to Mr. Romano, these good time credits that they're now giving 50% are for essentially staring at the wall. They don't have to do anything to get those credits. We have not allowed any victims to have input. And the other thing about Prop 57 is that it was passed in 2016. It was called the Public Safety and Rehabilitation Act. When you give people credits for doing nothing, there's no incentive for rehabilitation. In fact, it's a disincentive. They can sit in their cells and they can do nothing and gain these credits. And the main concern about this entire regulatory new scheme is there was no emergency to do this. What they did is they implemented them on a Friday afternoon at 3:00. They claimed an emergency. There's no emergency. And that's why we have a lawsuit and a petition asking a court to set these aside so we can talk about the wisdom of these regulations. And one of the things that's really, really important that the public needs to understand is that we have no data. There is no data since 2015, before Prop 57 passed, on whether or not or what the recidivism rate is. Now, we know as of 2015, corrections came out and said, well, the recidivism rate is 46.5%. We have no idea since the imposition of Prop 57. How are
okay.
we doing?
Let me ask Mr. Romano about that. Have you seen updated figures on the recidivism rate of those released for good behavior?
Oh, no, because the rules only came into effect on May 1st. So the people who have been released early so far under these emergency regulations, and I agree with the DA that they were passed as emergency regulations, only may have gotten a day or two off of their sentences. Again, because the regulations or perspective only. But I also just wanted to clarify that if you do stay in your cell, you will lose credits for not participating in programming and not going to work and being late for class. Also, it's not 50% off for murderers and rapists and child molesters. The worst of the worst all need to go before the parole board. And it's only about a 16% reduction from the prior rules.
So, and they do, and they go back to the parole board sooner, though, than they would have otherwise because of these credits?
About 16% sooner.
Okay.
Depending on how much they've already served.
Correct. All right. We're going to take a break, but just let me reintroduce our guests, Michael Romano of Stanford Law's Three Strikes Project and Sacramento County District Attorney Anne Marie Schubert. Will continue our conversation momentarily. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. A little bit later this hour, I'm very excited to welcome two of my KPCC colleagues as part of our ongoing KPCC Backbone series during our member drive. We'll be talking with them about the invaluable work that they do. These are essential KPCC employees, but they're not in the content department because it's so much more than just content creation or people on the air or even producers, as invaluable as they are. It's all the other folks, too, that are raising funds, that are making sure the operations are holding together, managing the building and making sure we're COVID safe for those of us who are still coming in to the studios and to the production facilities every day. This has been just a wonderful experience. We started it Monday. It goes through Friday, and we're going to continue this with future member drives because I'm learning about people's jobs, people I've known for years, and learning things about the work they do here at KPCC. Right now, our focus is on new rules that went into effect May 1st here in California that allow for some of those incarcerated in state facilities to be released earlier because of a larger amount of time credit that they get for good behavior behind bars. Joining us now is Beatrice Bayardo, who's the mother of an incarcerated woman at the California Institute for Women in East L.A. Ms. Bayardo is a member of the California Coalition for Women Prisoners. Ms. Bayardo, thank you very much for being with us. What is the status of your daughter and the behavior credits that she's been able to put together so far?
My daughter has been incarcerated for 11 years, and from day one, she has been programming different groups. She's completed different programs. She's achieved many, many self-help groups. She was in there's a different program that they have where they're employed within the prison. And to me, I feel that the DAs are not aware of all of their voluntary achievements that it's towards self-improvement, rehabilitation, remaining disciplinary free. If you sit in your cell, you do not earn these credits. So you have to continue to program to earn the credits and the milestones. And the way I see it, it's a financial gain and job security within the prison system by removing and not giving them the credits that they have earned. I mean, the highest pay within the prison is a dollar. My daughter has been part of a group where they lay out cement, the fencing, and that's why I look at it as a financial gain and job security within the prison system, because these women, once the doors open, they are out to program. And if you stay in your cell, you are not going to earn these credits. So everyone is working their way to rehabilitate themselves.
Now, just to clarify, you said your daughter has been in prison for 11 years. Is that right? How long is the sentence that she's facing?
They sentenced her 22 years, 8 months. Her base term was only 6 years. But on top of her 6 years, they've added 15 years of enhancement, which is, I think, a cruel punishment, because if she's already been punished for being in prison,
it's not easy to be in prison. I mean, yes, you're not in Disneyland, but you get punished. And on top of all that, they add years on top of your sentence. So my daughter is only there on enhancements, which is a bill that has not passed, for someone to recognize. So these credits are important because someone should be able to see, okay, we have people here who have completed groups, voluntarily completed all these groups, programs, and are doing anything to rehabilitate themselves, but it's not being acknowledged.
Well, isn't it acknowledged, though, in the current framework? Isn't your daughter's, even before the last change that was made, doesn't she still get out earlier for good behavior?
She got, I believe, 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah. And then with this whole pandemic, everything was at pause. Therefore, they couldn't earn any credits. So these credits that they were, you know, that they have coming to them would be a good thing. But now I think the DAs have, you know, put a pause on that. But I don't think they're very well aware of those that are moving forward and to gain and earn these milestones, because they're not just given to them by sitting in their cell. They have to work for them. So if these women are out there rehabilitating themselves voluntarily, they should have those credits coming to them.
Okay, and just clarifying your daughter's case, my understanding is that she took a gun to her boyfriend's house, threatened to do self-harm, and then there was an ensuing scuffle of some kind. The boyfriend got shot. Is that the circumstance for which she was convicted?
My daughter was in an 11-year relationship with this gentleman and with this man. And, she went to his home to take her own life in front of him after all these years that she felt humiliated and embarrassed because I knew that she was being abused by him, but she denied it because she loved him more than she loved herself. Therefore, she went to take her own life. There was audio that was not presented in the court. And yes, he grabs her. She's now trips over the threshold of his home. She's in his home. So now the gun went off and it grazed them. She didn't, she didn't do it purposely. So she was found not guilty of attempt murder. And it was an accidental case. But yet, her attorney said the judge had it for her. He didn't like her. So, you know.
It was a gun enhancement. Is that what she faced?
Gun enhancement and, yes, and burglary.
We're talking with Beatrice Bayardo. She's the mother of an incarcerated woman at the California Institute for Women in East Los Angeles. Let me go back to District Attorney for Sacramento County, Anne Marie Schubert. Ms. Bayardo was talking about what she said her district attorneys mischaracterizing this. Your response to that?
Well, I think they're misunderstanding. The purpose of this lawsuit is the fact that they claimed an emergency to completely bypass public comment. And as I said at the beginning, I'm not sure why they would claim an emergency when there was no emergency. Why don't we have a meaningful conversation, an honest conversation, where people like Mr. Romano, Ms. Bayardo, I wish we'd had a victim on this interview as well, to understand the massive impact that we're talking about. We, since 2019, we have released 30,000 people from state prison. When Mr. Romano says, well, we don't have the data because it was May 1st, we don't have the data since 2015 on how is this working? Shouldn't we have a public comment period so we can have an honest conversation? And I agree with Ms. Bayardo. I support rehab. I support milestones. What I'm talking about here is the fact that we have not had a open, honest conversation about whether these regulations have sufficient data behind them, sufficient input from all sides, including victims who have been completely ignored.
Ms. Schubert, was the stated reason for the emergency regulation here that the prisons are dealing with the need to cut prison population because of, you know, federal lawsuits and the like? So is that what was the stated emergency?
There was no emergency. The stated emergency was that it was in furtherance of Newsom's budget from 2020, over a year ago. There is no order from a three-judge panel to further reduce. There is no claim of COVID impacting. The only emergency they claimed in the paperwork was we're complying with the governor's directive from over a year ago to close a couple.
Okay. Michael Romano, Three Strikes Project, Stanford Law, your response to the process of how this was enacted.
So I guess I'm not usually in agreement with District Attorney Schubert, but I do agree on, first of all, the need for data. We at California, and actually nationwide, do not have sufficient data on any area of criminal justice, recidivism, the appropriate length for punishment, the enhancements that we were talking about earlier. So I would put that as a super top priority. And I would also agree that the DA's lawsuit against these regulations is really a procedural matter. They are not necessarily disagreeing with the substance that we've been talking about, but just the procedure with which these regulations have been rolled out. And they were rolled out on a Friday afternoon, which I do think, you know, sort of is unfortunate. And when the regulations, or if they are to become permanent, then they will get the full notice and comment period that the district attorney is complaining about. Of course, I think that she probably also does disagree with the substance of it, but the lawsuit is about the process. So where we, I guess, agree is that the lawsuit is about the process, and where we disagree is that on the substance, this is something that is really designed to increase and incentivize rehabilitation and, you know, as we've discussed, further comply with federal court orders, which remain in effect and have ruled that California's prisons are unconstitutionally overcrowded in violation of the Eighth Amendment. And, you know, honestly, the COVID outbreak throughout the prisons only proves that point. So I hope that's clarified.
I thank you very much. That's Michael Romano. He directs and founded the Three Strikes Project at Stanford Law School, where he teaches criminal law and policy. He was appointed by the governor to chair the State Committee on the Revision of the Penal Code. My thanks to Sacramento County District Attorney Anne-Marie Schubert, and my thanks to Beatrice Bayardo, also joining us from the California Coalition for Women Prisoners.
Support comes from Ciclovia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclovia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclovia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.